It's a great pleasure to welcome our next instructor based in New York City. Abhay Deshpande founded Centerstone Investors and serves as Chief Investment Officer. He has more than 25 years of experience researching and investing in businesses globally. Before Centerstone, Abe was a portfolio manager at First Eagle Investment Management, where he spent 15 years. He was also a research analyst with Harris Associates and an analyst at Morningstar. He holds a BS in finance from the University of Louisville. On behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you, Abe. The floor is yours. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sean, and thanks everyone for tuning in to listen to our case on O'Reilly Auto Parts. Just a brief description about Centerstone. Centerstone Investors is a global long-term value investor. We've been just in the business now for a year and a half, as Sean said. Prior to that, I was with First Eagle managing the First Eagle Global Overseas and U.S. Value Fund. We're at Centerstone Global, we're value investors, as I mentioned. Value on that spectrum, we tend to be more focused on higher quality names, companies that are undergoing some temporary problems. We tend to not do turnarounds and things like that. They tend to be a little bit too messy for us. And so with that in mind, I'd like to just talk to you about O'Reilly Auto Parts. So if you turn to slide six, O'Reilly Auto Parts is one of the largest aftermarket auto parts retailers in the U.S. At a recent $240 a share, the company's market cap is about $20 billion. So it's not exactly undiscovered, but it's an example of how sometimes value can hide in plain sight. At the current price, the company's enterprise value is $23 billion, and that makes it trade at 13.5 times EBIT, or operating profit. Aftermarket parts are those parts that are purchased for light and heavy vehicles after the original sale. These can be anything from engine starters to brake fluid to spark plugs. In the case of O'Reilly, they sell these parts to customers whose vehicles typically are older than 6 years old, that is after the original warranty has lapsed. And the mix of customers, it's a balance between DIY or do-it-yourself customers and do-it-for-me customers, split about 60-40 respectively. A DIY customer, is going to basically do whatever the job is on his or her own. They rely, though, on O'Reilly's trained staff to select the right parts. And then, as I said, the customer does the rest. In the DIFM, or do-it-for-me market, vehicles are generally serviced through third-party mechanics, garages, etc. O'Reilly's customer there is the garage. And the company ships the part to the garage, and the mechanic installs it for the customer on the vehicle, or for his customer on the vehicle. As you can see on slide eight, this 60-40 mix has been more or less stable since 2009. And we'll go into a little bit more detail later, but it's an important advantage vis-a-vis potential threats such as Amazon. Finally, the company sells a balance of own and third-party brands. Its own brands representing about 45% of sales. The company's growth model is a mix of organic growth and growth by acquisition. Their most significant acquisition was in 2008 when they bought CSK for about $1 billion, or 10 times depressed EBITDA. They've generally been good acquirers, which again I'll discuss later. Currently, they're strongest in, that is, O'Reilly is strongest in Texas and California. They have a very small presence in the Northeast, and they continue to open new stores, though. However, the overall industry store count has not grown much over the past 20 years. So rather, the growth has primarily been a function of market share gains in what is an overall stable industry. As you can see on slide 12, just talking a little bit about the industry, it is top heavy. The top three players, that is AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, and O'Reilly, have a combined market share of over 40%. The top 10 have a share of about 50%, which is up from 30% in 2001. So although the number of retail locations has remained fairly constant at about 36,000 points of sale, the share gains have been the primary source of growth for the larger players. But among the top 10, O'Reilly has had the greatest success due to its dual market strategy of serving both the do-it-yourself and do-it-for-me customers. While, for instance, AutoZone has focused primarily on the do-it-yourself customer, it's about 80% of our business. And although Advance Auto has a similar mix of DIY and DIFM, they've just had a constant, you know, shift changing of management. They bought a big company called General Parts a couple of years ago, and it's been a complete it's been a very difficult to integrate acquisition for them. And this lack of focus really, it's held them back for years. And so for them to take share back from either O'Reilly or AutoZone is going to be very difficult. In the do-it-for-me market, for instance, these are long established relationships that O'Reilly has built with the garages. And the garages, you know, appreciate the fact, and we'll get into this again as well, that the parts get to the garage within an hour typically. And that's a very significant advantage for a garage to have. And so it'll be difficult for Advance Auto to, you know, to turn around through share gains, but I guess anything's possible. But all that said, O'Reilly is the most balanced and most efficient due to its distribution advantage. That's its main competitive advantage. And so let me go into that a little bit more. The logistical efficiencies that they have are related to their purpose-built hub and spoke model, which makes them best in class when it comes to time to market for parts. So at the top of their distribution chain, they have 27 regional distribution centers, which carry around 148,000 SKUs. Beneath that are 312 hub stores, you know, again, getting closer to the customer, which average about 45,000 SKUs. And at the customer-facing level, they have about 5,000 retail O'Reilly retail locations, which carry around 23,000 SKUs. And each store's inventory is tailored to the needs of the local market. This finely tuned logistics model allows for 90% of their stores to receive multiple daily deliveries from either the DC or hub stores. And minimizing time to market is crucial in this industry, especially for the do-it-for-me customer, because customers many times cannot afford to wait. Therefore, availability is the primary factor in a customer's decision to purchase a part. And again, this is especially important in the DIFM market, where O'Reilly can usually have a part at the garage within 1 hour. Often it's delivered from the nearest store. And so for mechanics, this timely delivery is an important support of their own business, and therefore O'Reilly is many times the first call. And when they are the first call, in those cases, they typically get well over half of the business from the garage over time. This is why it'll be very difficult to displace them, in particular in the DIFM market. In contrast, AutoZone is another well-managed business with high margins and market share, but it is a distant second place when it comes to time to market. They have recently launched their own inventory initiative where, if it's fully implemented, stores will be replenished within will be replenished three times per week, so, you know, versus, you know, several times a day for O'Reilly. And also over 80% of Amazon's or AutoZone's business is DIY. So maybe that works fine for them, but it gives you a sense of how far ahead O'Reilly is when it comes to distribution. I think you can see now how, from our perspective, this tightly integrated logistics and retail model is an enormous barrier to entry to new entrants, even Amazon. And that's been an important driver of their market share gains over the years. Further evidence of that, of the competitive advantage they have, other than market share gains, for instance, slide 20, the company's same store sales growth has been consistently higher than its main peers, AutoZone and Advance Auto. The company's five-year average growth rate of 5.3% compares with 2.6% for AutoZone and negative 0.3% for Advance Auto. Also, O'Reilly's operating margins have been on a continual upwards trend. And finally, as proof of that they're able to successfully integrate acquisitions into their dual market hub and spoke model, note the trend in sales per square foot on the opposite page there. O'Reilly's sales per square foot have been trending higher ever since the initial dilution from the acquisition of CSK in 2008. So why is the stock weak? Or why has it been weak? I think there are multiple factors that have been weighing on the stock price. First came the suddenly slowing growth rates that began to show up in the first three quarters of 2017. when same-store sales grew a modest 1.5%. That was well below the 10-year average of 5%. The stock market has very little patience and often shoots first and asks questions later. And after peaking at nearly $300 per share, the stock began to weaken. This price weakness turned to outright panic selling when Amazon made it clear last summer, 2017, that they would compete more aggressively in the sector, and the stock quickly fell to $175-ish per share. At that point, we started looking into the industry, and we came to a very different conclusion than that of Wall Street. First, I think I already addressed the prospective Amazon threat, but you know, in essence, Amazon will gain share, in, particularly in consumable commodity parts and accessories, where there's no immediacy of need. But the vast majority of O'Reilly's business is insulated from this threat, we believe, anyway, and the company is well protected as a best-in-class operator with a one-hour delivery window. As far as the more recent sales weakness, we concluded that the two consecutive mild winters and a mild summer in 2017 was at least partially responsible. Also, turning to slide 22, keep in mind that O'Reilly's typical customer has a car that's 6 years old or more. This is important because car sales plummeted in 2008 and only recovered in 2012 to near trend levels. This dip in six-year-old cars is currently a headwind, but these headwinds should begin to moderate and could turn into tailwinds within a year or two. Combined with the continuing aging of the average vehicle on the road, we expect organic growth to return to its historical pattern. I can't pin down the timing any more finely than that, so do expect volatility as the company in turn surprises to the upside and downside during this transition period. So, you know, in Centerstone's, when you do our fundamental analysis, we tend to focus on a few things, in particular, the business quality, which I spent the last few minutes addressing. And we also dive into the quality of the management team and also the balance sheet. This is before we even get to the valuation stage of things. As Buffett says, there's a difference between a good business and a good franchise. A good business can have a good, you know, a lead for a little bit of time until other companies just sort of catch up, copying whatever it is they're doing. A franchise has a durable advantage that can last for a long time that protects the earnings power of the business. And so the twist is often, you know, what is a franchise? What is a good business? And, you know, how defendable is the business itself? So one of the keys is obviously, is the business itself inherently protected? I think that we think O'Reilly is inherently protected because of the vertical integration of the model and how tightly tuned it is and focused on the customer itself. The other part of that, though, is, you know, get the wrong management team, and sometimes they can turn what is a franchise into something less than that. And so it's key to understand the management team. And, you know, as far as this business goes, we think it's pretty much a high quality franchise, but to keep it a franchise, you need a good management team. And in this case, the top management, at least the CEO and the CFO, it's been stable since the mid-2000s. It's a story of, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So having a stable team is important, as opposed to what's been going on with Advanced Auto, for instance. And it shows in their discipline, in O'Reilly's discipline when growing their store base, and how they carefully expand the hub and spoke model as they grow the store count. As I said before, they have been disciplined in their acquisitions as well. CSK that I mentioned before, they purchased in 2008. It's a good example. As the recession hit, started to bite in late 08, CSK's stock price fell from $20 to $4. Had some leverage on it as well. And it was, you know, they primarily focus in California, but it's kind of subscale, had much lower margins than O'Reilly's and AutoZone. But O'Reilly recognized how at the time, O'Reilly had 1,800 stores, CSK had 1,300 stores. So this was a very large acquisition for them at the time. But at the time, I think O'Reilly recognized how CSK stores could integrate into the company's existing logistics chain and provide increased scale for its existing 1,800 O'Reilly stores. And that integration, it took a few years, took 3 years. And as I mentioned, if you looked at the operating margin progression for O'Reilly, you see how they, as the integration progressed, it really added to the total picture for O'Reilly. And keeping in mind, they paid 10 times EBITDA, but that EBITDA had been cut in half, basically, from the peak. So they paid a pretty modest multiple, all things considering. And I think they were able to do that because everyone else was scared. They did this in late 2008. So they, I think, showed that, you know, in terms of capital allocation, that they're pretty quite, you know, quite good at what they do. And as you can see on slide 25, the results speak for themselves, as O'Reilly's return on invested capital shows. It's gone from high single digits after the purchase of CSK, which depressed their returns, to nearly 30% today. Partly that's a mix of operating margin improvement and also capital efficiency. As I mentioned, the business model, we pay a lot of attention to the management quality. I think here serves to strengthen the moat around O'Reilly and suggest to us that this is more of a franchise and a high quality business. And finally, the balance sheet. It's, I guess, the third and the final leg of the stool when it comes to fundamental analysis as we see it. They use a modest amount of leverage to optimize returns, but that debt could be paid off in 3 years if they chose. They're not going to do that, but they could. It just shows you that it's a modest amount of debt. They currently have an investment grade rating, so there's no plan or need to cut the debt. But in any case, they're able to use that balance sheet strength and that investment grade rating to highlight their strength to the vendors. This helps them to get favorable terms from them, and that helps them to maximize working capital efficiency, which is another factor in their high returns on capital. Lastly, they own 40% of their stores and 70% of the distribution centers. You know, again, they could have played games and leased everything and shown even higher returns on capital, but even with that kind of dead weight of asset value on their balance sheet, it has not depressed the returns. In fact, what it's done instead is it's removed some operating leverage from the business model. So this potentially provides some relative resilience in the event of an economic shock. So finally, after diving into the business model and the management team and the balance sheet, we come to the valuation. And it's always tricky with businesses like this because you know, franchises are tough to value because so much of the value is embedded in the intangibles. In this case, we take our cue again from Buffett, who said it's okay to pay a fair price for a good business, as opposed to getting an absolute steal for a crappy business. As you can surmise, we think this is, as I mentioned, at least a good business, and possibly and probably even a franchise. We find that the stock, which trades at around 13 times operating profit or EBIT currently, it's at least fairly priced. Keep in mind that the stock has gone up from 175 to 240 or so in a very short period of time. So, you know, it was even cheaper when we purchased it. And also something else to consider, it is a full taxpayer. They pay it's a 38% tax rate. So they are a beneficiary of the recent corporate tax rate reduction. I think their earnings per share could be 15 to 20% higher if they got the full benefit of the new corporate tax rate. So that would, you know, translate to basically 18 times earnings. Obviously, the EBIT margin doesn't, EBIT multiple doesn't change any, but the earnings per share could rise 15, 20%. That would place us at about 18 times earnings, which is, I think, a pretty reasonable valuation for what could be a franchise. So in summary, that is Centerstone's case for O'Reilly. Keep in mind, of course, as I mentioned, it has run up. If you looked on page six, you see where our entry point is and where the stock is today. So it has run up, just so you're aware. Also importantly, keep in mind that the company could be in this transition period, because I mentioned the headwinds and the tailwinds currently. They could be in this transition period for some time yet. So as always, patience is important. And with that, John, I'll in concluding our presentation on O'Reilly.
Well, thank you very much, Ape, for such a comprehensive case on the company. Perhaps just one question from me on the forward-looking growth of intrinsic value. Looking at the valuation slide, it seems like on a steady state basis, the shares look fairly valued. So I assume much of the growth in value going forward will come from the compounding effect of the business itself. What range do you estimate for that growth over the long term?
Well, yes, we have to really specify long term. The current kind of headwinds, you know, they're not going to abate just like 6 months from now. So there is an underlying long-term growth rate of roughly 5 to 6%. That is a combination of vehicles getting older and more vehicles on the road compared to, say, 2008, 2009. So those two things kind of interplay and should allow for 5 to 6% like-for-like growth. You know, and add in maybe a point from market share gains. So between that and the fact that the company is roughly a 6% free cash flow yield right now, I mean, you're embedding a fairly decent, compound growth rate, even at the current price.
And perhaps also looking longer term on the potential threats, you did talk about or mention Amazon. What about more innovation or technology driven trends such as autonomous driving, car sharing, or other things that could change the dynamics of the industry?
Well, the primary drivers for demand for O'Reilly's product is miles driven, combined with the age of the automobile fleet. And the auto average age of a car has been going up for several years. So that's kind of, both of those things are tailwinds for them. You know, if you're talking about auto or car sharing and whatnot, I mean, that actually, increases the stress on the vehicle because they're driven more. So that's sort of a component of, I guess that would be part of the miles driven. But if you look on page 23, you'll see, or slide 23, you'll see the average light vehicle age in the U.S., and it just continues to go up. So we don't, at least in, that might be more of a threat, like in particular, let's say if everyone had electric cars, you know, that, I mean, that would obviously be a threat to a business like this, which, you know, sells 200,000 plus products to mechanical cars. But I think that is just so far in the future that is beyond even my time horizon.
Well, we will leave it there. Ape, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us and for sharing your insights and investment thesis.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Goodbye for now.